Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to make a living as an independent filmmaker in Texas? Although several regions of the country compete with the state for claim to Third Coast status, a growing number of writers, producers, and directors are choosing to make their homes and their films in Texas. My guests today are among those artists. All three have written, edited, directed, and produced the films they are showcasing in this year's Dallas International Film Festival, which runs through April 18th. Tom Huckabee's submission is called Carried Away. It's a semi-autobiographical family drama centered around a young man who breaks his mentally debilitated grandmother out of her nursing home.
Scene 122, band, take one.
Looks like Mom's here.
Want to see Granny yet?
Nope, just got in.
But don't be surprised if she doesn't recognize you.
Franklin, stop!
She's 75 years old. She had a stroke during surgery. And the worst part is, she keeps trying to run off. Well, I gave
her. Clay Lifeward's film is Earthling, a sci-fi thriller about a seemingly diverse collection of people who begin to realize that they are not human at all, but aliens who have taken refuge in human bodies to exist on Earth.
There was a lot of blood. At first, we thought you may have suffered a laceration. But blood tests showed you were 13 weeks pregnant. I'm really sorry. Are you okay?
Physical damage to the station's hull. Time is of the essence for the astronauts.
Why don't you take leave? The state will cover it.
I need to work.
This isn't a place to work out your problems.
Abby Glint.
Just transferred from John Adams.
That's why I'm here. I'm here for you.
I need to show you something.
All right, stay close, Missy. There'll be wolves here.
How did you get me out here? You know how I did you. I know things about you, things that you've never told anybody. You've been having dreams, too, just like all of us. There's others like us, and whoever you've been dreaming about is just as much a part of you as you are a part of me.
Who do you dream of, Judas?
We picked up a signal, like an EMP pulse. It was coming straight toward us.
And finally, Frank Mosley's film is Hold. It's a tense study of a young couple's relationship in the weeks and months after the wife is raped.
Laura doing all right?
I don't know.
You?
Yeah.
Did you talk to somebody about this?
Well, like a shrink?
No, just anyone.
What's there to talk about? I mean, things happen, bad things. You do what you can, you get past it.
Said the perpetrator injured
Doug Ryan, I'm a detective with the police department.
You could just describe.
I've been reassigned to the case. Well, I wanted to ask the wife a few questions.
Could you describe the man?
The same person did commit these crimes.
I can pretty much guarantee your safety, Mr. Marsh. There's a firehouse.
Hey, Excuse me, can you turn that off, please? I'm Alan Marsh. I live here. Who are you?
All three of the films we have just heard are being screened as part of the 2010 Dallas International Film Festival. And Tom Huckabee, Clay Lifeward, and Frank Mosley are here to talk about what it took to make them. Guys, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Chris. Glad to be here.
What makes Texas a good place to make movies?
I think that it's great because for several reasons. One, you know, we are all working on very modest budgets. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Frank, I have some idea what your budget is. I think I have somewhat of an idea what your budget is, Tom. But I know it's very, very modest. And
what was your budget?
It's more than a Starbucks employee makes in a year, but less than what like Donald Trump makes in a year. And I should actually modify that. It should go much lower than that. But no, the thing is, we're a right to work state, so it's not union. We could not really afford to use union workers, and we work with the Screen Actors Guild. You did too, right, Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, so pretty much when you're doing these low budget films, I mean, you do have to work with like, the Screen Actors Guild, but in general, like when you're hiring crew, we still pay our crew, but you can't afford to pay them what you would necessarily pay in Los Angeles. And also, the other big thing is like no one's really jaded here. Like I have friends that are Los Angeles, and they try to make independent films, and if they go to a coffee shop, it's like $2,000 to shoot in a coffee shop because everyone's been asked. Everyone's been asked to shoot there, so it's like, you know, there's that thing where it's like here it's still kind of exciting. No one's been asked. It's like, oh, you have to make a movie. And so a lot of times you can get things. I mean, we had a hospital and a high school for free in Earthling. It was crazy.
It's a lot of red tape that it seems like here out in New York and L.A. that a lot of people have to kind of deal with. So that's one of the things at least we're really lucky we don't have to deal with here.
Yeah, no, we're no permit city. At least in Dallas, it's no permit city. So you can.
So if you're not getting in the way, you can be there.
Yeah, I mean, still, if you're shooting on the street, you still want to let the police department know you're shooting on the street. Then you're like, hey, you know, and you can now. Janice Berkland at the Film Commission will probably get mad if I don't mention the fact that it's still a good idea to get these permits. I think they're like $20. They're very cost effective permits. We got a permit to shoot at this public lake. That we shot out over in Grand Prairie, and it was like $50. So it was like nothing. But, you know, and then they came and they made sure the water was okay, and they did all these things. They actually met us down there. Things that you would think that, you know, would be reserved for larger budget films cost us $50.
So your three movies could not be more different in terms of subject matter and style. I'm wondering, though, and we'll start with you on this, Tom, do you think there is a distinctive sort of flavor to Texas films?
I don't know. Based on these three, I would say probably not. I think, you know, Texas is a giant state, you know, a country of its own, a continent, all kinds of people, you know. I see it as a microcosm of America. And geography-wise, I know that's one of the things that the Texas Film Commission pitches, is you can come here and have just everything that you would need, beaches and mountains and deserts and whatnot. So I'm not sure.
Is it challenging to find talent here?
I wouldn't say so. I think the actually really surprising thing is that there is such a wealth of talent here, and especially in the DFW area, because Austin usually gets lauded the most just because of the UT film program they have there. And, you know, a lot of big filmmakers have come out of Austin. And it is a great city, but I think that DFW, especially these past few years, is finally beginning to kind of make a mark. And people are beginning to see the kind of, as you said, diverse projects that can come out of all these different people from different backgrounds, different styles.
So what do you have to handle for yourselves on an independent film that you wouldn't have to mess with if you were attached to a studio?
Everything.
Making sandwiches for craft services? And
yes,
basically.
Now, Tom and I actually shared an amazing first assistant director, Angie Meyer, who I think she's listening to the show right now. So I just had a kick out to her.
Yeah.
But Angie, like,
hi, Angie.
There's no way. I don't know if you'd feel the same way, Tom, but I can definitely say that there's no way without a good assistant director that the film would ever get made or ever get finished. I mean, basically, there are certain people that I know I can't live without on a production. And myself, I've used the same crew now for like over 7 years. And you know, Tom, you've been at this for, God, I don't even know how long you've been.
Don't go there.
Okay, I won't go there. But no, I think there are definitely certain things I'd say that I cannot. There's no way I could do on my own now as I start to kind of delve into slightly bigger films. And you know,
I would like to jump in about the talent pool.
Yeah.
And say that I think I got a better cast than I would have gotten if I was making it in L.A.
Really?
I would have gotten caught up in the name game of trying to attach a star, you know, and would have ended up with somebody alcoholic on their way down, you know, that used to be big in Europe or whatever. And that wasn't the case here. And just got a fantastic cast that was all, you know, nobody was jaded, like Clay said. And they're just incredible actors that are working all the time, either in theater or film or commercials. And I think that commercial market that's so strong here has trained actors, you know, to, you know, be on time and hit their marks and say their lines and be cooperative. And so, yeah, I just couldn't imagine a better cast than what I got.
So I guess it's not an issue. You say the actors are working all the time, so they don't have to get time off, you know, 6 weeks off from their job somewhere else. This is how they make their living for the most part.
Oftentimes, yeah. Mm-hmm. lot of them also work at Starbucks. I mean, LA actors are the same thing. They either work at Starbucks or they work at a they wait tables or it's the same thing anywhere. I think that that's something that certainly doesn't change. The one thing that you kind of touched upon, that Tom touched upon, though, I think there's an important to mention that, like, all my friends who go to Los Angeles to make films, like, to make independent films, they get talked out of making their films. Because here it's like, okay, I've got this amount of money, let's go. And you get to LA and you have the same film. They're like, well, no, wait, I know this guy and you can talk to this guy and he'll get you more money. You really should be doing this for more money than you've got. And then so you end up going to what, like meeting hell. And you end up, you don't make your movie, you end up talking about your movie for forever. And you're in meeting hell for eternity.
Yes.
So what is the process like of raising the money just to get this thing into production?
That's the most difficult thing. And I would say I'm often asked, you know, what we need for help. And it's money and money. And that's all. And I think the fact that there is a lot of money here, you know, underneath the ground, 3 or 4 miles underneath, it's coming up in gushers, indicates that there's money to be had, but it seems like it's still in, it's in people's mattresses. And what we have to do is introduce the people with the money in their mattresses to the people with great film ideas and get them working together. And there's a group in Fort Worth, the Endeavor Cinema Group, a nonprofit, and that's what they're specializing in, is having mixers between business people and filmmakers to form friendly relationships, you know, get to know each other, not necessarily hustling each other for money on a specific project, but just getting, you know, getting comfortable with each other and the idea of putting money into a film.
So when you say business people, it sounds like you're talking not necessarily about people who have invested in film before, but people who have money from some other source.
What I find is a lot of them have been burned once. Mm-hmm. And or they have a doctor or a dentist who's been burned once. And so it's gotten around that movies is risky. But I think that's changed. I think it's they're no more risky than anything else at this point. And the film business is doing fantastically well because of the downturn in the economy, and I don't think there's been a better time to invest in movies.
And what does it take once something is produced to shop it around and try to get it distributed?
Well, the classic way that everybody knows about, and everybody has that Sundance dream that, you know, if you're Steven Soderbergh, you come out with Sex, Lies, and Videotape. But that was actually from a whole other era now. I mean, because that was at a different time where there's a lot of independent films coming out right now that had they come out back then, they would have exploded onto the scene, and they, I can't even imagine. I mean, Earthling and Carried Away, I think if back in 89 or 90 at Sundance, they would have gone just exploded onto the market, and I think they would have been picked up immediately. The problem is there are now so many ways to show your film, and with the digital revolution, it's so accessible to make a film that you have so much more competition. Everybody wants to be a filmmaker. And that's great because now it's encouraging art and the creation of that art. But at the same time, now you can easily get lost in the shuffle. And so a lot of people are trying to do streaming of films online. There are a lot of different websites that are available, actually, where you can actually put your short films online and you can peruse through a catalog of all different types of genres. And a lot of filmmakers actually selling their films, both shorts and features, to these websites. That way they can be seen because they know the festival route, it doesn't guarantee any sort of distribution deal whatsoever. I mean, possibility, but it can't guarantee any of that.
We're talking about independent filmmaking in Texas with Frank Mosley, Clay Lifeward, and Tom Huckabee. They are all featured in the Dallas International Film Festival, which continues through April 18th. You can find information at dallasfilm.org. We'll resume the conversation in a moment and invite you to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can distinguish yourself professionally and personally. Evening classes are available in Plano and Dallas. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Tom Huckabee, who is writer, director, and producer of the film Carried Away, Clay Lifeward, who is writer, editor, director, and producer of Earthling, and Frank Mosley, editor, director, and producer of Hold. All these films are featured at the Dallas International Film Festival, which continues through April 18th. Find out about screenings and times at dallasfilm.org. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372. Or send email to think@kera.org. How would you characterize the audience for independent film here as opposed to in places like L.A. and New York?
Here specifically being Dallas, it's an awkward market because, like, you know, Austin has a very distinct demographic because of students, and there's a very strong film society there that has a lot of retrospective films. Then you have places like the Draft House Cinema that Tim League runs, and they have series. They have you know, art series, and they also have like the Weird Wednesdays and the Terror Thursdays, fun things to bring people in. And there's definitely a culture there. There's the, you know, Dallas Film Society here, but it's, you know, you're dealing obviously with more of an urban sprawl here. Things are so spread out, and the idea of just like community culture is a little bit faded. So I don't know. I think most people's notions of independent film are like the very, I don't know how else to say, like soccer mom friendly ones, like your Marches of the Penguins and whatnots. But hopefully festivals like this change that some, like, expose people to films that they might not normally be able to see. And I mean, we have so many great movie houses here with the Magnolia and the Angelica and even the Inwood, the venerable Inwood. But it's like, I feel like it's a little irksome when you see that some of the fare that's in there, you know, you see like, you know, Miley Cyrus movies playing at the Inwood or whatever. It's just, I don't know. I went to college in Austin, so I was exposed to that. And after coming back, there is such a great base of people here who love to make independent films and are really into more groundbreaking or avant-garde independent films. And this is like, you know, and to some degree you get a little bit of it in the Angelica, the Magnolia, but I feel like it could be a little bit more.
I've been impressed by the large audiences at the festival. Just about everything that I've been to has been sold out, even second screenings like last night of Brotherhood. You know,
I think honestly, I think there's a hunger here in the area for that. I know our good friend James Johnson is actually trying to open up the first true art house cinema, the Citizen Theater in Fort Worth, which is, I mean, he's been trying to get, you know, funding for that to go through pretty quickly, and I hope it does, because it seems like everybody you talk to, like, I think it's reaching a point now with most commercial films playing at the multiplexes where you're starting to see a pattern where they're remaking so many films that have already been made already, and so you're remaking remakes. That I think there is an audience here in the area, and hopefully it can become the culture that Austin is. It just needs a little push, and maybe the Citizen Theater and some other things like that will actually help get there.
So you're not awaiting the A-Team remake, is this what you're telling
Yeah,
you?
Exactly. Not quite.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Ken in Plano. Hi, Ken.
Yes, hi. I've got a paradox I'd like to describe. On one hand, technology has brought about what I think is a paradox, in that it's never been easier to express ideas into a camera and have people look at them. But still, it's very difficult to make ideas financially viable. And it's never been harder to get a movie made, to have somebody finance a movie. So I'm curious to know, your guests like to know, why it is that the new technology and the ease with which films can be created hasn't brought about a whole new business model where everybody just follows Roger Corman's career. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. What do you guys think?
Well, I think there is a new model that's evolving, and that is you can literally make a movie for free if you have the equipment and stream it on your website. And if you happen to know somebody at Netflix or, you know, YouTube or places like that, you know, they're all starting to charge or allow filmmakers to show their films and charge and then just take a percentage. I think that model is evolving as far as making a profit or making a living. You know, it's no more tougher or easier than it's ever been.
Well, I actually do. I'm glad that you mentioned the Roger Corman thing, because I actually do subscribe to the Roger Corman formula. I'm the one genre guy of the three guys here. I made a science fiction film, but
not in 48 hours, though, right?
not actually that far off. It was only shot for 18 days. But the thing with our film is that I've made several films in a row with my producer, Barack, and the formula we have, and we actually both, I should mention, came from Troma. We had worked for Troma in New York
a long time back.
But the formula we had is like, you know, we do films in genres that we can sell. We hopefully do intelligent films within genres that we can sell, and we put people in those films. We bring in somebody from Los Angeles that we can actually afford to put in for a couple of days, and that's good for the genre. Like on the previous film we did, Blood on the Highway, which is like a vampire movie, we brought in Nicholas Brendon from Buffy the Vampire Slayer because that's the demographic that's going to be watching. And they're like, hey, it's Nick Brendon's in this film, even if you sell 500 more DVDs based on that, and that's awesome. On Earthling, we had, you know, a couple of genre guys you recognize, like William Catt, the greatest American hero, was in the film. And
he looks pretty good, actually.
He does. I was telling him you said that.
Yeah, he's you can tell he's ready to come back.
And Peter Green was our big one. We actually brought him in for longer than we normally bring in these people. Normally, like, we did this one movie, Prison of Go-Go. It had Mary Warrenoff in it, and she's a Corman vet.
Yay.
And the joke with her is, like, we have her in one location. She's in one room, but she's got 20 pages of dialogue and, like, just holding up cue cards, and she's just and you spread those scenes throughout the movie, you pepper them throughout, and it's like suddenly she's a bona fide co-star. And, you know, so it's like, yeah, we do definitely. I pay lip service. My producer pays lip service to marketability and, you know, foreign sales. We've both been to the American film market, or actually Barack's been to the American film market, and I think it's important to make something that, you know, that has an opportunity to be seen for us beyond the festival circuit.
Why are there more guys making movies than women?
Because we can't make babies.
Your magnum opus can't be a human being. So.
Says you, I can make babies.
And let's just hope that with Kathryn Bigelow winning the Oscar.
Well, but it's amazing that she's the first one.
And that blew my mind. Actually, it was a moment when I was watching the Oscars and they said, you know, first woman to win Best Director. I couldn't believe it. I thought maybe they were mistaken. I'm like, no, surely in the past, there's no way. It was very surprising.
Is there a reason for it, though? What do you think?
I don't know. I think there are more out there. Like South by Southwest this year, where we premiered Lena Dunham. Her film Tiny Furniture won the best film there, and she's been doing amazing with it. And there are a lot of amazing female filmmakers. I mean, Lynn Shelton won the Gotham Independent Spirit Award this year for Hump Day. I mean, there's definitely a resurgence. Kelly, who did Wendy and Lucy and Old Joy, yeah. I think it's definitely – I mean, sometimes you don't hear about it. It's just because in general, I don't know. There's a bit of that old boys club kind of mentality. But I think that it's starting to – I think that it's starting to break down. I mean, Lynn really – of that whole – like you probably heard of the whole mumblecore thing that kind of came out of South by Southwest. I mean, she was the first one besides like the Duplass brothers to really break out of that and really like – I mean, show that. I mean, there was a big sale at Sundance. It was like one of the only big sales at Sundance 2 years ago was Hump Day, and it's done phenomenally well. And that's, you know, that's all in. So
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Speaking this hour with Clay Lifeboard, Tom Huckabee, and Frank Mosley. Let's go next on the phones to Roger in Richardson. Hey, Roger.
Hi, Chris. Love your show.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question. I have a son about to graduate from college. He's a movie maker. And just wonder what advice you should have somebody young breaking into the field.
So that you don't have to support him for the next 20 years. just a little joke there. Do you guys have some
advice? Which college?
We just lost him.
So. Oh, we lost him. Oh, okay. Sorry. Work on film sets. Honestly, it's the best thing to do. Figure out exactly what department you're interested in. If you don't know what department you're interested in, just get a feel for it on film sets. When you do figure out what you like, target those departments. If you work for, I mean, we've all worked for free. At least me and Frank work for free. Tom, you work for free?
Oh, sure.
Okay, good. No, we've all worked for free at some point. I think it's just a matter of just showing that, you know, it's funny. As long as you're present and you're there and you actually put in the time and you nobody has to hunt you down on set and you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and you don't complain, it's amazing how fast you rise through the ranks because there's a lot of laziness out there, and a good committed person will find themselves in position in no time flat. And there are organizations that can help you find films in production. You know, the Texas Film Commission has a website. I believe it's texasfilmcommission.com or .org?
I'm not sure.
Should we Google it?
I'm a little embarrassed.
Somebody will find it. Let me ask you guys this. Almost every job, including those that people really love doing, has something that you wish you didn't have to do, paperwork you didn't have to file or, you know, whatever. Can you talk just individually about the thing that if you could strip your job of it, you would?
Making budgets.
Mm-hmm. Just making them, sticking to them, deciding what
to cut
out?
No, just making them.
Physically writing them. I don't know if there's anything I actually would take out because they all are intrinsically linked. As for part of the movie-making process, and this is kind of an extension of that question for the caller just a moment ago, but people love to see you get your hands dirty. And the best way that you can show people that you fully understand making films is to work in all aspects of making films, to at least know how to direct, read books on screenwriting, to learn how to work sound and to hold a boom. So for me, even though there's really tough parts of making a film and it can bust your back sometimes doing it, you've got to do it because then you're going to be a lot more aware and you can help others when you pull them in when they're just starting out.
I'd like to jump in for advice for the father that called in. Clay and Frank have been addressing sort of the working class method of getting into the business by, volunteering, working for free, but you can also buy yourself into the business, and that's very viable too. If this man is a master of the universe and running a corporation and has money and he wants his kid to, do well. Well, gosh, finance a movie. And
you're trying to get an investor for your next one.
No, I think it's just reasonable. We want everybody involved, and it takes a lot of money to make a movie. So that'd be a great way. He's as likely as not, he might be spending $100,000 to send the kid to graduate school. Why not spend it on a movie of Frank's?
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
What does it take when you have this passion project that you have centered your life around for whatever period of time it is to ensure that you have enough distance from the work to be objective in terms of cutting it and fixing it and making it what it needs to be?
I'm a big fan of always letting people see the cuts as you're nearing completion.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, not like going overboard. If you show it to just everybody you know, after a while, you're going to go into a tailspin.
Too many cooks.
Because there's just so many ideas of what your movie should be, and you can't be influenced by these. You still have to have a focus for what the film is really about, and you can't lose that. But I know with every cut that I make, I try to show it to a handful of people, both that I know pretty well, who will be very honest with me, who I know will be honest with me, but then some other people that I don't really know that well, be like a friend of a friend who I just met. I'm like, hey, come into the room, check out this film. And usually the feedback can be pretty insightful. I mean, even little slip-ups, like for continuity purposes that you didn't even notice, like, oh, thank God you said that because, that would have gone to print. That would have been forever stuck in time. So
when you say continuity, this is like a glass is full and then the next
glass
shot
is empty. The next, right? Like, moment like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my background is comedy and specifically stand-up. And when you – I find that a lot of filmmakers seem to be very reticent to do test screens. But I think it's actually very important, and I think a lot of people who have comedy background really realize that, because when you go on stage, you do not want to be up there with something that does not work, and you also don't want to outstay your welcome. So usually the rule of thumb is you get in there as late as you can and you get out as early as you can. And the best way to figure out what you can cut out is to do test screenings, and we were fortunate to do a test screening with complete strangers. And at the Austin Film Society has a thing that they actually do a work in progress series, and it's structured so well that they make sure that basically the audience is 65-70 people, the majority of which you do not know, and you have to sit there and they talk to you about your film afterwards. And and Brian Poyser, who runs it, who also is a filmmaker at Lovers of Hate here, Brian is so good at moderating. He makes you, there's no way you can defend your film. You just have to sit there and take your blows, and it's all. But it's very constructive, and doing something like that, it's nerve wracking. But I feel more people should be open to that process, and I think that most filmmakers I know are very Frank. I know I'm very open to that process, but it's important. I mean, because again, it's you want people to see, you want as many people to see your movie as you can. I mean, that's how you survive. And if your movie is not good because you haven't tested it, and it's a rough cut or whatever, and maybe there's some things in there that shouldn't be in there, then that's, fewer word spreads and fewer people are going to want to see your film.
What about you, Tom?
Well, we did an actual test screening where we gave out questionnaires, and And then I had my editor, Ben Wilbanks. And by the way, I do want to get that into that. I didn't edit my film.
That was my error earlier. I apologize for that.
Edited by Ben Wilbanks and Sam Krutzinger. And also, we used this mobile editing facility called Confidence Bay that's owned by Sam Wilbanks and Michael Weiss. And it's fantastic. They went along with us through the Southwest into Arizona and California, so by the time we wrapped picture, we were 75% done editing, and that was a new experience and something that I think's just now happening. You know that, and we were actually showing our film. Our first test screening was at a motel in Blythe, California, in the parking lot, and we invited all the people staying at the hotel, the staff, and then passersby, and we had the cast and crew, and we had 100 people in the audience. And I sat on the front row and laughed my ass off. And I think it's being with an audience and watching the film that is most helpful for me. Feedback is great, but a lot of times it's totally contradictory. But when I watch the film with an audience, I can kind of feel it feels like a wave that you can surf, and if it's. You can just feel whether or not it's working, and that's kind of how I do it.
Are you sort of holding your breath before key things that you really want to work?
Yeah, but I feel like I've become part of this mass responding to these shadows on a wall, and I respond the way they respond, you know, because you get so isolated making a film, but then when you watch it with a big group, there's a collective mindset or consensus aestheticism that kind of, and you just become part of that. You know, you can't resist that. That's for sure.
It's a little easier with comedy too. Like, this is my first serious film in some time, and it's a little easier with a comedy because when it's working, you have the very visceral response from the audience.
Or a horror film,
silence. You don't know what it means.
Which is
my
big problem. Yeah, my whole film is silent, so the audience is silent with it practically in a lot of the moments. So.
There's some films I think that are meant to be watched with a crowd, and other films that would be just as good at home. I watch most films at home, you know, on TV and. And I'm fine with that. But some films like comedies or horror films where the reaction of the crowd, the vocal reaction of the crowd, add a lot to it, you know.
We're talking about independent filmmaking in Texas with filmmakers Tom Huckabee, Clay Lifeward, and Frank Mosley. They are all featured at the Dallas International Film Festival, which continues through April 18th. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'll take more of your calls in a moment. The number is 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can distinguish yourself professionally and personally. Evening classes are available in Plano and Dallas. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with three independent filmmakers from Texas. Frank Mosley's latest production is called Hold. Clay Lifeward's is Earthling, and Tom Huckabee's is Carried Away. All three films will be screening at the Dallas International Film Festival, which continues through April 18th. As quickly as we can, Tom, when's the next time your film will be
10 o'clock tonight, Wednesday the 14th, at the Angelica 6.
Okay.
We were playing actually 4:15 this afternoon at the Angelica Dallas, and then we just had a screening added. We're playing the Dallas Museum of Art this Friday at 10 p.m. because our other screenings have been selling out.
Okay, Frank?
And actually, we just had our very last screening last night.
So people will have to Google you.
People
will
have to Google
other...
it and find out. But we are playing at the 2010 Kent Film Festival in Connecticut in a week, so we'll be flying out there for that. So anybody in Connecticut, come check it out.
Great. And I'd like to say to people who go on the festival site, and if it says that it's sold out, that I've noticed that there's usually maybe 20 seats usually left over.
That's
so
true.
If there's something you really want to see, don't be put off by that sold out button thing.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Frisco and speak with Nat. Hey, Nat.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey. Hey. How you doing?
Hey, I'm a writer myself, and currently I'm in the process of developing a screenplay, which I never done before, and I like to take this notion to an independent film. So since
you know, this is my first time, and I want to explore this area. I have no idea what kind of contact that I have to have, and who do I need to talk to, you know. Like, basically, I'm looking for a guidance in order to get this process in that notion. So what kind of advice do you have for me, and what do you think I should do in order to get this process?
We got it. Thanks.
Is the script written?
Is it already done,
Nat? Halfway through.
Halfway done.
Well, I would advise finishing it and then making it yourself. But that would be the only way to...
And to get and actually that's a good notion. Depending on the type of script, obviously, I think it's very important to note that there are certain types of scripts that can be made for certain types of budgets. Do you mind if I ask what type of film this is? Is it like a
whole story is based on two different culture, Bollywood and United States, American culture and Indian culture gets together in a way to create a romantic love story. So. And I have no idea how to process this and, like, how to make this movie. You know, who do I need to go? And, what kind of contact that I have to have? And what type of individual that I have to go after in order to get this process, finance-wise and everything else?
I think we got it, Nat. Thanks.
Yeah, there's some resources at your disposal. First of all, I would say when you're writing the script, try to write around, if you plan on making it yourself, try to write around resources that you already know you have at your disposal. I mean, if you can... If you think you can raise enough money, if you have, like, for example, a trip to India involved, I don't know, make sure that's something you think is feasible. But there are resources. I mean, the Texas Film Commission that I mentioned before has plenty of resources. Shockingly, the film area on Craigslist is amazing. If you say, hey, I'm a first-time filmmaker, I'm looking for this, this, and this, on Craigslist, I mean, I've taken jobs off of Craigslist personally. I work as a director of photography a lot, and I've taken jobs off of Craigslist. A lot of people do. Don't discount stuff like that. Social networking is always a big thing too, not just for marketing your film when it's done, but also when you're in pre and say, hey, I'm reaching out to other filmmakers. And it's the easiest way to put a face to something because, it's like so visual. If you're on Facebook, for example, you can find people so fast. But, yeah, I think Tom, what he said is the most important thing is just get the script done first because that's what people want to see.
Get it registered with the WGA to make it official.
Yeah,
you know,
20 bucks to register.
And join the Dallas Producers Association, DPA, and just send a note out to their crowd saying you've got a script and you'd like to – find some producers that would read it, describe what it's about. As likely as not, you'll find somebody, from your sort of background looking for a interracial love story, and you probably get, five or six responses.
Table reads and stage readings have always worked out really well for us in the past as well. Yeah, if you're able to kind of get in touch with, like, local press and get some actors that are local, both for theater and film, and kind of make a big deal out of it, you can actually get quite a bit of attention. And then once it gets out in the press, like a lot of film people or filmmakers in the area who may have other connections can come to that. We did that actually with my second feature film that's in post right now called Hot Cold. And we had a giant, like, big event night for it, like stage reading. And we brought in all these different actors, and it actually turned out a lot better than we even anticipated because of the press. Like, the press brought out all kinds of people.
So you guys shot everything on location for your films, is that right?
Yes.
Is there anything that's harder to control if you're not in a studio?
Driving scenes,
airplanes,
sound.
We did a fair amount. We actually did some studio stuff. Mm-hmm. We did a little bit of studio stuff, but yeah, in general, yeah. But I've also the mindset that when you're shooting on location, you go with the happy accidents. The reason why I'm not a novelist, besides the fact that I'm not talented enough to be a novelist, is that the other reasons that you're not. With other art forms, you're making things in a vacuum. With film, it's like you are forced to collaborate. And not forced. I mean, in my case, I love to collaborate, and I love to take ideas from other places. And I love when things happen. Like, maybe it wasn't supposed to be snowing, but now it's snowing. Freaky Texas snow that just came out of nowhere. You incorporate those things. You don't shy away from them. If something happens and intrudes upon your perfectly scripted world, you accept those things and you roll with it. And a lot of times it's better than what you originally came up with. And so I personally love location shooting, except for in the middle of the summer in Texas, which I always find myself doing, sadly.
I did hear that there's several or two studios being built, one being built here and one in Fort Worth that were pretty large studios. So maybe we will be shooting more in studios in coming times. I mean, I think for Texas, North Texas filmmaking to really be a viable year-round process that you have to have studio space because, it's just too damn hot and cold out there. 3 or 4 months out of the year. As someone who lived in Hollywood for 25 years, it became obvious why the film business is there. You know, it's because of the weather.
Consistent. Room temperature all the time.
Today marks, I believe, the one-year anniversary, our first day of principal photography of Earthling. We shot this 1 year ago to the day. I'm pretty sure if not today, then like a day or two later. And it was unseasonably cold in April, and these poor actresses had to get into a lake. Just to show this for solidarity, my assistant director and I, we got in the lake first just to show we were willing to do anything that we forced them to do. But it was ridiculous. It was like, it should not have been this cold in April.
My leading actor was blown off the road by a tornado.
Whoa.
Now, maybe you win the prize.
Can't top that.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time it's Phil in Fort Worth. Hey, Phil.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thanks.
Yeah, my question was for the filmmakers, sort of based on two callers ago. Both my brother and I went to radio television film school here in Fort Worth. My brother, who's a few years older than me, he went the path of graduating and saving up money and moving directly to Los Angeles with all of his other peers and friends that were also moving out there. I've been in the area a little longer than he has and been trying to do work in the area. And I've had a lot of hurdles in the Dallas-Fort Worth area getting started and getting some good work. And one of the main reasons he moved out there was just because of the vast amount of opportunities that you can have to work. He got into the television business and he got his union membership in editing. And I'm just kind of wondering if y'all had any good advice for someone who's done some decent work and some decent different types of work in the area. What would be a good way to kind of step up that level and get more bigger gigs and
so, Phil,
and develop a career?
I'm getting that you're working, but you're not able to make a living at this point in North Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you guys think?
Have you have you completed anything that you can show, or has it been submitted anywhere?
I'm sorry. What was that?
Have you completed any works that you are able to show people or festivals or anything like that?
Yes, I have. I've worked on. Gosh, tons of different short films and feature-length films. I've also done a lot of work with like television, sports broadcasting, some marketing videos, marketing demonstrations and stuff. So kind of different things. The thing about being a movie maker is it's hard to get to being a movie maker, especially in Los Angeles, kind of an elite society. And, of course, the goal is to be doing movies instead of television and all the other things.
Well, what do you guys think? How did you make the leap to feature-length filmmaking as auteur?
For me, it was always just like, I always took corporate jobs or commercial jobs, but it was always my one rule with myself was no matter what it was, if it was a film job, always a feature film job always trumped a commercial job. And even if the commercial paid 10 times more, my only rule with myself is, that did not matter. I always would drop it for a feature because the day I didn't do that is the day I stopped chasing that. So, and as far as my own films, my first feature I did years ago was completely it was self-financed. I mean, I used credit cards. I had to say Citibank was an investor. I just didn't know they were an investor at the time. But,
at 28%.
Yeah,
at
28%. Oh, good God. They got paid back, though. No, I don't know. It's tough. I mean, you can market yourself in so many different ways. Dallas is a tough town because in Los Angeles you can be like a career camera loader and there's enough work where you could literally just load cameras with film all day long. But here it's like you kind of have, if you want to just do this, you to some degree, if you're freelance, this is. I mean, you can always take a job at a place that does video, corporate videos or whatever. But if you're freelance and you want to work on films, it's good to be somewhat balanced. I mean, I work as a director of photography on non-union films. I work as an editor as well. And I've done, like Frank said, pretty much every position on a film set at some time or another. And again, it's just like using the resources on the film commission, send your resumes to the production managers on any of these films. They're all listed and it'll have a section that's like the hotline. It'll say who's, you know, what films are going into production, who the person you send your resume to. And then the Craigslist thing is huge too. I'm going to oversell it, I've actually gotten like a significant amount of work off of Craigslist.
That's interesting because I would have assumed that Craigslist would be advertising for film work of a very different nature than what you guys do.
Well,
do you have to be careful?
It can be. You have to use your discretion. You have to investigate. You can't just take anything blindly. I know one of the things that also I know the caller was talking about, like kind of making that leap into making features. I know with Hold, it was really unexpected because Hold actually started off as a short film. And so what we realized was that we had something that was a no man's land in terms of viability of length because it was a 50-minute movie. And it had just grown out of rehearsals to be this awkward length. And so we actually – it taught us a lot about expanding and how to construct the inner workings of a script to make it feature length. And what actually is – what are the rules to make something a feature length film? Like what is the best running time? You know, nowadays most films are about 2 hours long. But yet, with our running time, we had an hour and a half long film, and that's only because it started off as a short. But then we were able to add just enough of really good character development to make it feature length. So, like in our case, it was a complete accident in a lot of ways.
So, did you have the sort of three act structure to begin with?
We did. It was most stories have the three acts, but it was in our case we were just able to actually kind of heighten and emphasize certain things with the characters. So you just never know what can actually happen with just doing a short film.
Trust me, Frank, it's actually a benefit that your film is 90 minutes or shorter. Like, they're really, especially the way with new media and things are going, distributors are looking for shorter features. And it's crazy. They're starting to, like, 70-minute films are starting to be considered features now.
Wow.
There are features that are in the 60-minute ranges now. So
that's
crazy. They're not documentaries, even.
The narrative.
Yeah, all the rules are breaking down and being reordered for sure. I'm getting ready to do a theatrical tour, which is of non-traditional theatrical venues like nursing homes and retirement centers, because my film is about a young man who kidnaps his grandmother from a nursing home in order to make her life better because she's miserable at the nursing home and has dementia. So I've found that there's a great interest in seeing the film, both by seniors and by people who take care of seniors with dementia and Alzheimer's. So I'm getting all kinds of calls from groups like that. Senior Services in Seattle has called, and they want me to tour around to all their different facilities and show the film. And I'm also interested in doing something like a multi-level marketing thing, like a Tupperware parties, because I found the people that really adore my film are middle-aged women who tend to be the caregivers in America. So And they're the ones that want their friends to see it.
That sandwich generation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is a very lucrative market. I mean, Hollywood films would die to have, that particular market right now since, they have a lot of money to spend. And so I want to reach them by going directly to them, like a rock band that in a van, touring the country, showing the film at churches and universities and Alzheimer's groups.
You should totally do like a publicity stunt where you somebody will get kidnapped from the screening at this old age home. Get carried away by Carried Away.
Yeah.
You can have that one's free. You can have that one.
Right.
My guests today have all written, edited, directed, and produced films over the years. We won't go in once again to the categories, but you can find all their information on IMDb or at their websites. Tom Huckabee's film is called Carried Away. Clay Lifeward's is Earthling, and Frank Mosley's is Hold. You can learn more about screenings at dallasfilm.org. That's the website of the Dallas International Film Festival, which continues through April 18th. Guys, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you
Absolutely.
So much.
Chris, thank you so much.
You.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.